grab guys and tackle them. You can't jump offsides. You can't. I mean, you can't jump offsides on a field goal block. You know what I mean? I mean, on fourth and seven, like, you know, just can't do those things. And if we can make that step, Steve, then we'll be a good team. But we won't be a good team until we make that step. And that commitment to execution and forgetting about everything else is what the good teams in this league do. They show up on Sundays and they execute.
Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That was Panthers head coach Matt Rhule. We've got the Mark Spain Real Estate Nick Pick coming up in about 40 minutes here. Despite putting the pox on the Florida Gators football program, we've got something for college football fans in 20 minutes. But There's something about the way Matt Rhule has talked about the Panthers' issues. And it's not that he's talking about it like it's happening to somebody else. But it's where the emphasis is placed on the many issues of the Carolina Panthers. Now, there he's talking about the silly, stupid penalties.
By the way, Carolina Panthers, as we speak, through 11 weeks, third most penalized team in the league.
And over the last three games, they are tied with Buffalo and Cleveland as the most penalized teams, averaging the most penalties per game. So it's getting worse. And you add that to missed tackles. You add that to how the team's coming out at the half, right? They've come out flat consistently in the third quarter.
Third
almost
quarter
every
was
game.
The issue again. No doubt about that.
It seems as if Matt Rhule is saying, and I don't know if this is intentional. I don't want to put words in his mouth. All right. I want to be fair to Matt Rhule. I know because we actually question him, and it would feel like maybe we're the only people to do that in town. I feel like we get, you know, lambasted as we don't like Matt Rhule. No, we're trying to hold Matt Rhule accountable. And there's this thing that happens in the NFL where for the first 2 years, everybody just goes, well, I don't know if he can coach. And then you walk away from it. And then you get 2 years in and you've won five games. And all of a sudden you go, well, he can't coach. Well, we're trying to do this in real time. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know, 27 games in, whether Matt Rhule can coach in the NFL or not. And that is a big difference between coaching the NFL and coaching on Saturdays. But when I hear Matt Rhule, well, we're doing things good teams don't do. Well, who's ahead of the org chart here?
He's ultimately responsible, as is every head coach in the league. You're ultimately responsible for the performances that take place out there on the field. Because even though you don't block, tackle, and catch and throw the ball, you sign off on the guys that do.
And it, like, even if you don't, Matt Rhule happens to have about as much control as you can have over a roster in the NFL.
Minimum 51%.
Yes. Yeah, I would say minimum 60%. No offense. Big Bitty Fitty out there, Scott Fitterer, our guy. But even the most average coach in terms of power still chooses who they put on the field. And it's just, it's wild to me.
Who you draft.
Who you draft. You're part of that conversation the least. And Matt Rhule is not the average guy in terms of power. One of my real frustrations here is when when we talked about the run game. For a long time, it was, yeah, I don't know why we're not running the ball more. What? Are you serious? Very rarely will I ever go to this card because I don't care how much anyone gets paid. It was $63 million, not for Matt Rhule to coach this team. It was $63 million to get his bleep out of Waco, Texas to come here. So that's how much it takes to get him here. It's not about how much he, quote unquote, gets paid to coach. But you're the $63 million man. You can make upwards of $70 million. I'm flabbergasted at this notion of, well, yeah, I mean, we just don't, you know, we're doing things that good teams in the league don't do. Now give me the why. Because that's the thing that I think, like, you have to know the reason why. And you know, we had who the hell was it? Somebody on this station has said, well, maybe it was Will yesterday. Well, you know, I'm talking about specifically the offensive line. Will Kunkel of Fox 46.
Yeah.
He had said something like, well, maybe the offensive line isn't talented enough. But it's not just the offensive line. The defense is making these, and the defense is having trouble tackling, right? We had the drops issue, right? Michael Jordan has continued to commit every penalty in the frigging game of football, and he's still out there. So at one point, I have to ask Matt, to use a Norfleetism, what are we doing?
So I'm going to give Coach Rhule credit because there have been things that have been corrected. And I haven't looked here recently. I'll do in just a minute. It appears that the drops are not as glaring as they once were. The kicking game. We were nervous about this Joey Sly thing coming out of the preseason. Zane Gonzalez has made us feel better about that. Cam Newton appears to have stabilized the turnovers from the quarterback position. We can feel better about that. But overall, the things that we have talked about all year, third down offense, red zone offense. Now we're doing something. The defense didn't play well yesterday. The missed tackles, the run fit has been an issue that they have not rectified. Now, I keep coming back to it's not just the coach and player. It's also the staff. Remember last year, Matt Rhule had a lot of turnover, and some of those guys went to get promotions, and they went and got better jobs, some of the lower-level assistants?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we're going to see turnover again this year on the staff. Because when we look specifically at the O-line, with Coach Pat Meyer, the offensive line coach over there, would he say, I haven't done my job good enough? Or would he say, look what I'm working with? Or are both true? He's not being a good enough coach, and they aren't talented enough.
I think he could point to John Miller, Cam Irving, and Pat Elflein as evidence that they have not taken this offensive line nearly seriously enough. That's the only place that I'll give the talent credit, though, meaning a talent deficiency credit. And, oh, by the way, he has a former third-round pick in Brady Christensen sitting there. Brady Christensen, every time he's been on the field, has graded out well from Pro Football Focus, even though we don't recognize those metrics even on this show anymore.
No, you don't.
But, like, I just, I want the Panthers to be good. I don't think they're that far off. But what holds you back, I can deal with. 2 years ago, you blew up the team, and you don't have enough talent yet. I can deal with that. Because that is a very real thing of, you felt the need to hit the reset button on the organization, and it takes time to have the requisite depth and talent on your team to compete week in, week out in the NFL. That's not what we're talking about here. That's my concern. I'm not mad at Matt Rhule. I don't think Matt Rhule's a bum, but we're looking still to this day for reasons on whether or not Matt Rhule, and I love that you brought up his staff, and his staff can coach. Well, 27 games into it, we should not be talking for the 27th game about penalties. Stupid penalties. Penalties that are as much about focus as they are about execution. That we mentioned the Dante Jackson. I'm not going to hammer Dante because Dante's been one of their best players. Dante, in some ways, gets a pass for this. But I do wonder, what is the disconnect here? Are you still just a really young team? Because I'll give that. Like, are they? I know they have more vets this year, but are they still just a young team learning how to play in the NFL? I can give you some of that.
No, I'm not there. It's enough dudes over there. Even though Irving, Elflein, Daquan Jones, Morgan Fox, Robbie Anderson to a lesser degree, but he's still a veteran at this point. They got enough dudes over there. Gilmore, Cam is now back in the locker room. They got enough dudes that we shouldn't be having to talk about this stuff, not this late in the season. We just played week 11.
But then the question is, why?
Because if you either coach it or you allow it.
Okay.
So now I'm pointing the finger back at Matt Rhule.
And I agree with
and
you.
And I'm asking, where is the disconnect? Yes.
I've talked a lot about the slippery slope. I think Matt Rhule, when Sam Darnold went down, I think Matt Rhule realized, oh bleep, I bet on the wrong horse on Sam Darnold, and then I bet on the wrong guy to back him up in P.J. Walker, meaning for an extended period of time, not for a one-game backup scenario. And you've mentioned Cam is a panic move. It is a, oh, bleep.
We got to do something.
We got to do something.
And they can stop telling me that it had nothing to do with the financial component. Listen, David Tepper bought this team to make money. Cam Newton is going to draw viewership, merchandise, parking. You saw what that stadium looked like on Sunday.
And by the way,
it doesn't look like that at PJ's out there.
By the way, it's going to change the conversation. The conversation was becoming, what are we doing?
The conversation was becoming apathy. And there were people, Panther fans, that were checking out on this now, year two of Matt Rhule.
And I think the problem is, the slippery slope is still there. I don't think, listen, we should not be checking out now after the Washington loss. You've said it was a bad loss. I don't think it's as bad of a loss We're qualifying losses. That's where we are right now. I don't think it's as bad of a loss as the New England game, or certainly the worst loss of the season is the Giants game. I'm still furious about that game. I will not talk about that game anymore. But the slippery slope is you've got six games left in the season. And I really, if Cam can play that way against Sunday, they're going to have a chance to win nine games, eight or nine games from here on out. The problem is the defense has got to turn this around. The offensive line has got to look more on every given week. They've got to look more like the Arizona offensive line than they do against than they did this last week against Washington. And the fact that we're talking about coachable things being the things that are bringing you down, that's really concerning, because the difference between this team winning two of their last four games, Cam looking good, him being the answer long term, and maybe the defense plays well but just not well enough, and the difference between winning six games this season, one more game the rest of the way.
If they win one more game the rest of the way, then all of the conversations we had on that five-game losing streak, we're going to have the same questions again.
And I think there's a huge difference between going 3-3 the final six games of this year and winning two less games. It doesn't feel that way because you're still going to be a below 500 team. You'll be 8-9 versus being 6-11. But for Matt Rhule specifically, it's not. Yes, it's about this year. And it is about this year showing some proof of concept that you are moving this thing forward. But I don't know we're seeing signs that it's working in the locker room yet. We see some weeks where it seems to be working. There was the initial burst out of the gate to start the season.
I told you what that was about.
But that we're still having this. We're still having the penalties. Third down. Coming out in the second quarter, or the second half, right? Tackling. These are signs that there's something systemic there. And that should be concerning for the Carolina Panthers, moreover than just wins and losses.
Here we are. X amount of games in, 20-whatever games in to Matt Rhule, and no one can still tell me what Matt Rhule football is. You know why? Because we have seen the Carolina Panthers be consistent at anything. I'm talking about from game to game, the overall valuation of the property that is the Carolina Panthers. They just haven't been consistent. And when I think, thank God the bye week is coming up, because they need one. I think they need to mentally recharge. I think emotionally, they're a little spent over there. When I hear Hassan Reddick talking like that, and this is now the second time we've heard from him in a capacity where it's about locker room and accountability and voicing some of his frustrations. And then Matt Rhule, that's the second most, I say, disappointed I've heard Matt Rhule sound. So when I think about, and I juxtapose that to last season, remember the bye week was week 13 last season.
Mm-hmm.
And the four games coming out of the bye, they won one of them at Washington. So they went 1-4 in December. So I don't even have a sample size of Matt Rhule to be able to say I am confident, certainly with this schedule, coming out of it, that if the leadership, and this is really my point, if I felt more comfortable with the leadership overall and they were in unison and singing Kumbaya, then I'd be like, okay, coming out of the bye, they'll be all right. I don't know that coming out of this bye, they're going to be all right, knowing that they have Miami this week.
Joe Person backed me up. I had said in the first hour of the show, this team just needs wins. That's what Joe Person said in talking about the conversations that we're having around this team. Mm. They need to start this weekend. This is a crucial game because then you've got Atlanta on the other side of the bye week, right? You've got Buffalo, who's not played great. But then beyond that, and by the way, New Orleans looks gettable right now with the way they've played. I know Tampa Bay did work with the Giants yesterday, and they look back to being Tampa Bay. But this schedule isn't as grueling. The Dolphins, although they've won three straight, have not been a great team all year long. The Falcons have been bad. The Saints are, like, there's an opportunity here to have the end of this season be the opposite of what it was last year.
The opportunity exists, especially with Cam playing like that. But if they're having some true leadership concerns,
yep.
If guys aren't buying in over there, if there are questions being asked at Thanksgiving, it just chips away at the confidence that I want to have about the operation.
How concerned should we be with the Panthers' leadership issues? And from those issues to Foundational issues. Christmas comes early in college on Sports Radio FNC. Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. We are inching closer to Thanksgiving. God, I love this day. I love this week. We got the 19th annual Street Turkeys.
Coming up tomorrow.
And that is coming up tomorrow, as you have mentioned, in OBTW. That's presented by Ram Pavement and Audi Charlotte. That's at the Jack Daniels Doghouse, benefiting the Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina and Loaves in Fish's Food Pantry. Excited to be there. We got turkey. I'm going to smoke a turkey this year. And by the way, what comes after Thanksgiving? The big C, the big Christmas, and Christmas come early right now in college football. Because if you're a fan of college football, God almighty, it is just dudes getting murked
and we
on
aren't
the left
yet.
And right.
Oh,
no.
We aren't done yet.
Like, how many? This is like the most in season. Like, we haven't even made it to rivalry week yet. And we're talking about Virginia Tech, Miami. Well, okay, Miami is not open yet. But Virginia Tech, Florida, Washington, USC, LSU, TCU.
Say Washington State?
Washington State, which came open 3 weeks into the season.
And it's a Power 5 job. That's why I brought it up.
Well, no, I just meant like that's seven Power 5 jobs. Also, decent group of five jobs being available as well.
As what?
As well. I burped. But I thought that... So I say that to say that there is one person in college football who's picked the absolute right time to peak, and it is South Carolina head coach Shane Beamer. And here's what Gene Sapikoff, who was on the clubhouse yesterday with ULEP, had to say about the first-year Gamecocks head coach.
Lane Kiffin and Josh Heupel will probably battle for SEC Coach of the Year, but Shane Beamer, if he were to beat Clemson, maybe win a bowl game, I mean, he should be right in there, too. This is pretty incredible to think that South Carolina has won four straight home games with three different starting quarterbacks, and two of those games, they were sizable underdogs against Florida and Auburn.
I mean, all due respect to Lane Kiffin and the other coaches of the SEC, if Shane Beamer beats Clemson, that means they will have gone 7-5 before they get the bowl. Shane Beamer should be the SEC head coach of the year. For what he's done, that team had no business winning what they've won. And I'll go one step further. Where this team is peaking at, if I'm Shane Beamer, you'll never do better than what you're doing right now, especially if you knock off Clemson. I think Shane Beamer should do the sensible thing, which is with Virginia Tech open, if there's an opening to take the Virginia, I don't think Virginia Tech should go to Shane Beamer, but if Virginia Tech wants to bring back Beamer ball, I think Shane Beamer should run home to Virginia Tech, because I think that is a much easier and better job than South Carolina. And yes, I'm playing matchmaker this early in the season.
Yeah, clearly. Virginia Tech is an easier job, but it's also harder because of the dynamic here. It's an easier job. You're not in the SEC. You don't have to deal with that schedule week in and week out. But it's also harder because you're going to a legacy property. And regardless of what people are going to say, the name is going to stimulate the thought of, well, we should be back to where we were when Dad was coaching. That's a healthy expectation that may not be realistic right now.
Well, but right now.
Meaning.
I think his ties.
Drop off is sizable.
I think his ties and his personality would buy him time in Blacksburg. And I guarantee you, there's a population of Tech fans who heard what I just said and want me thrown off the air. Because I think.
We'll have to ask Bailey.
I think they think, like you do, that's a big. For a guy with 1 year
at the Power 5 level, yeah.
That's a lot to ask for. And again, I don't think it's where Virginia Tech should go. I'm just saying. I don't think South Carolina anymore. I don't think South Carolina is a job you stay at. I think it's a trap job. I think it's like Duke. And again, much different reasons why it's tough to win at Duke. But I think it's like Vanderbilt. Like the disparity in South Carolina has some money. They don't have Florida money. They don't have Tennessee money. They don't have Alabama money, Georgia money.
It's a different dynamic.
So I'm all in on Shane Beamer making the move. I'll still go back to it, though. As we play matchmaker here in college football.
Virginia Tech. They better go get Clausen.
I think Clausen. And, you know, people have said, well, you know, who was it yesterday with us? They had said, oh, it was Bill Bender. He said, I think what he's doing at Wake Forest is about as well as you can do at Virginia Tech, but it's easier to do that at Virginia Tech than it is at Wake Forest.
Yeah, your recruit, the academic standards, there's a difference there. And quite frankly, the history of the program, the pipeline to the NFL, the marketability of the pro, it's a different deal. Game day environment. Bailey says this all the time. Like, Wake Forest is the smallest, I believe, Power 5 enrollment in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different deal when you get to Virginia Tech, when you blast in Enter the Sandman and the fan base. And like, yeah, Clausen should be interested in Virginia Tech. I don't know how interested Virginia Tech is in Clausen.
That is also fair. I think Virginia Tech can have the most prosperous coaching search they've had in a minute if they set their sights properly. If Whit Babcock is thinking the same lines of Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell and all the names that are hot and sexy right now, James Franklin, I don't think those are the guys you should be looking for. Let Miami, if they come open, let USC, LSU, let them fight over the good, not great crop of coaches at the top. Because I think the undercard of coaches like the Clausens, I think that's where you're going to make the most money.
So you're talking like you want the second round pick of coaches.
Yeah, I think.
Where that's the value because of the contract and there's. Clearly, they can still play. Some of the second rounders had first round grades. They just happened to slide into round two for various different reasons.
For instance, TCU. I think they should hire Dino Babers.
Babers. Syracuse.
Like
he would play at TCU. I think that's a sneaky good job.
I don't know.
I like that job a lot.
I think Gary Patterson made that job what it is. I don't know what that job is without Gary Patterson, especially in the newly evolved Big 12 that is to come. But, like, they're talking about Sonny Dykes. Sonny, who had been out at California.
Yeah.
Now he's at SMU. And I get it.
SMU,
there's the Texas tie
up.
Because of his dad.
Yeah.
But I think Dino was the guy behind some of the success at Baylor with Art Briles.
He's an offensive mastermind.
Yes.
And Syracuse offensively has been competitive in the ACC in several games they had no business being in.
And then the same things that we can say about Dave Clausen, he succeeded in a spot you're not supposed to succeed.
Syracuse football's tough.
It's Syracuse.
That's a tough situation.
So as we start to play matchmaker here, I wanted to go through some of the other jobs. Is there anybody that makes sense for Florida? Because the most recent odds from Bovada have Bob Stoops being the leading odds getter to take over Florida Gators football.
I like and respect Coach Stoops. I just wonder, and he was coaching in the XFL. I just wonder if Stoops has the stomach to go in there. Florida is closer to a rebuild than they would give credit for. I just think the program, they got dudes. They're always going to have dudes. It's Florida. But can Coach Stoops really go get out there and get down in the weeds? When you've accomplished as much as he has and made the money he has, are you really trying to work as hard as it is to win in the East? Kirby's got Georgia up and running. So you got to beat two. You got to beat Kirby every year, and then you got to find a way to knock off Saban.
I think Stoops is in the same classification as Luke Fickell and the same classification as Matt Campbell. They're great coaches, but I think the fit matters. I don't know. Like, Bob Stoops at USC, I don't think that works.
No, I
think
like
Bob
that.
Bob at Florida doesn't make a lot of sense.
Doesn't work for me.
And like when I think of Bob, like if Michigan were to move on from
Harbaugh, would be a mistake.
God, I would pay Bob Stoops every bit of money at 60 years old or 50. I think he's 59. At 59 years of age to come in there and try and resurrect that and bring it back to what it was.
Bob Stoops, 61.
Oh, 61. So I was right the first time. So like I don't. If people trying to convince me that Billy Napier is the right hire there. After firing Dan Mullen, I don't understand that line of thinking.
So let me come back. Who's got the AD? Fickell's former AD is at LSU. Or is he at
No, oh, he's at South, USC.
USC, that's right. So, yeah. This Billy Napier is intriguing because I hear that name a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you were going to make a move, it makes sense. He's already down there in Louisiana. You slide him over to the LSU job.
So he's used to Gators.
Which you hate, by the way. I don't like Billy Napier at LSU. Who else fits LSU? What is LSU? I'm thinking about what is the job. You're clearly in the competitive SEC West. You've got a rabid fan base. You're making money.
There is a lot of money at LSU, to give them credit. If we're going to talk about how small of jobs Syracuse and Wake Forest is, LSU is one of the biggest jobs in college football from the money side of things.
Saban. You had, who's my guy they murked before they got Orgeron?
Oh, Les Miles. You've had Mad Hatter.
You've had the Hatter, Sabe, Ed O got him a title. He's out. Whoever you get has got to fit in that tier. Who fits based on what's available in the marketplace?
Ironically, I can't believe I'm saying this because I just poo-pooed the Florida thing. I actually think Bob Stoops would be a better hire at LSU than he would at Florida. The staff would matter. But I think he's a better overall head coach than at Orgeron. You're going to have talent because of the just sheer amount of money that you have there.
Here's another thing. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You and me at thought.
But if he can go and find the right coordinators, I think Bob Stoops, as a win as much as you can over the next 5 or 6 years before he decides to retire again, I think that makes more sense there. Down on the bayou, Bob having had success in a smaller spot like Norman, I think that makes more sense than Florida.
Here's the issue with Bob taking the Florida or the LSU job. Oklahoma's coming to the SEC, and he's not going to do that to Oklahoma.
I don't know that he wouldn't. I honestly don't know. I don't know that he would or that he wouldn't here. And if you guys are just joining us, we are playing matchmaker here. Itty bitty fitty wanted to get up on this. What do you got, buddy?
In regards to the Florida job, what about Jeff Hafley from Boston College?
So that's interesting. Obviously, Hafley was the Ohio State defensive coordinator for a long time. I wonder how people in Florida would look at that. I personally think Jeff Hafley belongs in that conversation with Dave Clawson. I'd rather hire from that group of guys, guys who have over-delivered in places where you don't win, like at Boston College or Wake Forest, than James Franklin, who's been about as good as you can be at Penn State, or who's fit the expectation of how good you should be at Penn State. I like Hafley.
At Florida, nah.
But again, I think that the crux of this is, can you sell the Gators fan base that Jeff Hafley is a better coach than Dan Mullen?
I don't think you can.
And by the way, I like Jeff Hafley more than I do Billy Napier. And again, that's less. Here's the other thing about the Napier thing that bugs me. So much of what is, he has done a great job at Louisiana. Right? Do you know what everyone's selling him as, though? Oh, Saban protege. Get out of your way with that, LSU. No protege of Nick Saban is going to beat Nick Saban. Hire the best head football coach.
Yeah, and we're also, I think, missing the boat on the coordinators. Say what you will, and he got a tough year, but if they're able to salvage it, Tony Elliott is going to be a finalist for some of these jobs. Who else coordinator-wise?
I thought you were going to sell me Bill O'Brien again.
I think Bill O'Brien could have one of those jobs. Who you got?
Yeah, Marcus Freeman, D.C. at Notre Dame, previously at Cincinnati.
Yep, his name comes up a lot.
See, the problem is, but like, are you going to hire one of those guys for one of the 10 best jobs in college football, like Florida or LSU or USC?
He'd be a good fit at Virginia Tech.
I think a guy like
Freeman would be. That's a good call.
I think Tony Elliott could come in with rings and get NFL dudes on the phone. And even though he had a tough year this year, I think he could be sold to a fan base.
We are playing matchmaker here in college football. Go ahead and make marriages on your own on the text line, 704-570-9610. Whether it's Florida, Virginia Tech, USC, LSU, what names make sense where? And we do have breaking news out of the NFL next on Sports Radio FNC. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, final segment of the show. Big thanks to Joe Person and Brian Geisinger for joining us on today's show. Some breaking news coming out of the NFL. Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News reporting that Jason Garrett has been fired, the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants, so he is out after a year and a half on the job. I don't really have a lot of strong opinions on whether or not Jason Garrett is a good offensive coordinator. What I can tell you is, what an absolute Bush League job by the New York Giants. Jason Garrett was not the problem with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is the problem with Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
And more importantly, this is Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman finding anyone to fire to try and make it through the end of the season. The New York Giants organization, I feel so bad. I really do like that organization. I mean, I like the Mara family. I like the history of the New York Giants. The state of this franchise is absolutely pathetic.
They're in disarray.
Yes, this 100%.
Like, they are, we talk about busting at the seams and they're coming undone. They want it to be fixed so bad, and they have no idea how to stabilize this thing.
Yes.
They need to get rid of the GM.
Gettleman has to go.
They have to get rid of the GM.
It's a four-year rebuild. You don't get 4 years to rebuild in the NFL.
And you know what? Let's have some fun here. I wonder if we were to give the Mara family and the Tisch family truth serum, would they say we should have matched the offer that was put on the table to get Matt Rhule on that plane to East Rutherford?
I don't know. Has Matt Rhule done enough in the NFL for that to be their second thought? For them to think, man, this would be so different if Matt Rhule was our guy right now?
Do you think they feel better about what Matt Rhule has done here or what their guy has done there? I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to the family. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
I mean, listen, it certainly could. Joe Judge is such a slappy. He just is. And you knew it the second that first press conference, when he came out as the guy who's never played football in the NFL, who wants everyone to know how tough he is. You knew for a fact what that guy was. And now he's won 9 games in 2 years. And Zach Gelb, who's a buddy of ours on CBS Sports Radio Network, he'll be talking about this tonight. You'll hear it right here on Sports Radio FNZ. But he was talking about, well, should they fire Gettleman or should they fire both? I usually am in favor of, like, Chris Ballard in Indy. When he got there, Chuck Pagano had been the coach. They had been to the playoffs a bunch of times. They had had some quarterback misfortune. I was cool with Chris Ballard keeping Pagano one more year so he could evaluate Chuck Pagano, because I thought Chuck Pagano had earned that. I'm not sure Joe Judge had earned this job in the first place.
I agree with that.
And I don't think he's done anything that proves that he should keep his job. I think the Giants need to blow it all the way up, and I think once they need to bring somebody from the outside in.
They hitched their wagon when they took Daniel Jones, 6th overall. They hitched their wagons there. They then went out and spent money in free agents. They then made the trade for Leonard Williams. They've done everything you can do, and it has not worked. They couldn't help the Saquon Barkley injury. That's a thing. And now I think Itty Bitty just put this out there. It sounds like a likely successor to Jay Garrett calling the offensive plays, a name you'll know. Freddie Kitchens, former Browns head coach.
That slap D. Oh, my God. Oh, what a bunch of morons.
The slap D going to the slap G's.
I mean,
it just makes sense.
Freddie is one of the nicest human beings and the most engaging guys you'll ever meet. He has no business calling plays. You know how I know? Watch the 2019 Cleveland Browns. Watch what, because everybody talks about his time as a interim offensive coordinator after Hugh Jackson got fired. He wasn't calling the plays. He wasn't. He helped game plan, but somebody else on that staff called plays. And he got all the credit and got the job over Greg Williams, who actually won the games as the interim head coach. This is such a bad idea. So if you're just joining us, the latest here from the NFL, I'm sorry, Giants fans. I do root for you guys. You guys aren't Jets fans. Just kidding, Jets fans. You guys have earned your stripes too. I root for the Giants organization just from afar because I love the history of that organization. Jason Garrett.
Ooh.
To anoint Freddie Kitchens as your play caller. You deserve what you get, Joe Judge. You deserve what you get.
Also, a note real quick, college football-wise, we mentioned it's rivalry weekend. The Heels at State. Ricky Person Jr., 34 minutes ago, announcing he's out.
Meaning off to the NFL?
Off to the NFL, yes.
So that adds a little bit of something to that game.
Hang on. He's sitting out a rivalry game? A chance for State to make the ACC title game?
I did not say or see that he's sitting out. I am seeing that he is saying, I'm going off to the league.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how this impacts Saturday.
Real quick, we're going to buzz through the Mark Spain Real Estate Nick pick here, mostly because we are crunched for time. I'm going to pick the Lakers in Knicks tonight in New York. And here's the crazy thing. The Lakers over the last six games have been really bad against the spread. They've only one of their last four games, they've actually covered the spread. Well, tonight they're 7-point underdogs. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to take the Lakers and the 7 points. The Knicks have also been really bad here against the spread. I'm going to pick the Lakers to keep it within 7, not necessarily to win the game. That is the Mark Spain Real Estate Nick pick. That means it's time for What You're Burning On. 704-570-9610. Give us a call. Let us know what you're hot about in a good or bad way. And we'll give you 30 or 60 seconds to speak your piece. Biscuits and gravy. Just in time for Thanksgiving. What you burning on, my guy?
My guys, you know, I was just thinking about what you guys said earlier about Matt Rhule and him wanting to be the voice of the locker room. I think that's what it is. You know, he's not letting the players say what they got to say to the other players to, you know, light that fire up under there, you know what I'm saying, up under their butt. So I think that's what it is. You guys have a happy Thanksgiving.
Was he stroking the little thing that's under the turkey's neck? I need the official term for what that thing is.
He was definitely stroking something.
Yeah, all right. Phrasing,
unnecessary.
Yeah. I'd like to if I'm going to lose my job, I'd like to be the cause of losing my job.
No, you have to ride the roller coaster that we have to ride every day sometimes.
Good job out of biscuits and gravy there. Stan, what you burning on?
You know what? I'm going to show some appreciation. I was going to go a different direction. To the maintenance crew here at the facility of 1 Julian Price Place, The temperature has been under control for the second half of this show. It's a reasonable temperature, and I'm extremely thankful. Because whatever the bleep that was that we started out with, those conditions, I was looking for human resources. But we're now okay. We have stabilized. All right.
Stanford P., what you burning on, my guy?
I am burning on a Nick Wilson review of Ghostbusters Afterlife. I need it. I'm done with sports for the week. Let's hear it.
So I did this yesterday on What You're Burning On. Let me tell you, Stanford P., I loved it. I loved every minute about it. I want to go back and watch it again, but my wife and kids will know, and then I can't cry poor when they want to try and buy something I don't want to buy them. So it was great. It was really, really good. It's not as funny as the first two movies, but it's got a great story. It's got a little bit of it's almost like, I compare this, and I mean this in the best way. It's like a Stranger Things version of Ghostbusters in a movie. There's a lot of nostalgia at play, but it hits all the right buttons. It keeps you guessing, and really just great all around. I hope they make a sequel. Really love it.
I need these 4 days off coming up. I need to get caught up on my movies. I need to see King Richard. I still have not seen the James Bond. I'm sure there's something else out there I need to see. I'm behind. Ghostbusters, though, I'm good. I had a moment as a youth with the first one. I'm good.
Itty bitty fitty, what you burning on?
I already got declined the invitation to your house over for Thanksgiving.
Because you have a place to go here.
I get that. Are we doing show Christmas gifts by chance?
No.
Why not? Are we not America Sports Talk Show host family?
Well, what are we talking about here? Can I buy you a Zippo lighter and then we're good? Or do I have to, buy you something of consequence?
I mean, I think we should have presents wrapped, unwrapped, on air, get each other.
So I'm buying breakfast. I buy lunch. What else do you guys
want? Never bought me. A biscuit.
I give you free love advice for your personal life.
That didn't get me anywhere.
So here's,
no, it did. It got you to a point that she turned you down again, but it was done more
respectfully. So your advice sucks.
No, your execution. I'm Matt Rhule.
And you're Sam
Panthers.
Darnold?
No, you're the Panthers run defense.
Here's the problem. The last time this show bought Christmas gifts, 3 weeks later, my producer was riffed because of budget cuts. And inside the next 8 months, I had a new co-host. So every time I buy Christmas gifts, people start getting murked around here. I don't want to take that chance. I like my guys right now.
Oh, apparently that's real talk. Turkeys do have beards. Yeah. I thought y'all were just playing around. Like, that's literally what it's called.
No, all great sexy animals have beards. That's why me and Kyle Bailey have beards.
I actually rock a beard, too, clearly. Hello.
I can't, well, because you're bald. I couldn't tell.
Sus. On to you. You know what?
That's fair. That's fair, because I have a widow's peak, so I'm starting to lose my hair. I have no business talking about that.
Are you going to go bald? Like, are you going to cut it off? You're going bald?
No. I don't have that beautiful dome you have.
So you're just going to hold on to this thing?
Yes. Yes. I'm going to wear hats for the rest of my life until there's some magical pill that I take where all of a sudden I've got a full head of lettuce.
You should call Drew Brees. You got to talk to him.
Drew Brees and Ben Affleck, they've got the money to get good plugs. I don't have money to get good plugs.
But you have a beautiful voice that you can get endorsed a product and they'll help you out.
That's
leverage.
It's about leverage. This voice isn't getting me Ben Affleck plugs. Let's be real. At least I'm honest about where I am.
Look, I was trying to give you something here.
In life. Great. Big thanks to our guests again. Itty Bitty Fitty, you're sus as always, but we do love you. And a fair question about the Christmas gifts. I have no idea. Stan, good stuff today, buddy.
Appreciate you, man.
Tomorrow rather, we'll be out at the Doghouse for Street Turkeys. Excited to be a part of that event once again. KB's coming up next until tomorrow at 10 a.m. Nick for Stan and Itty Bitty Fitty saying stay safe and be good, Charlotte.
Are we done?
Lord, I love you, Carolina.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.